I think that the digestive tract is the most important part of the animal. As a nutritionist, that seems natural. But the small intestine lining is kind of like a castle wall. It's designed to keep the barbarians in the digestive tract and out of the castle, out of the body. Well, mycotoxins come along. They get absorbed by the small intestine. They cause small intestine cell death. And now we have a hole in our castle wall, and all of the bad stuff gets into the body.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Boost digestive health, performance, and profitability with Digesterone Prime, a feed additive that enhances digestion and immune function in dairy calves. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/prime. Exalit, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Agrarian Solutions, research-backed microbial solutions for healthier, higher-performing livestock. AgriComfort, the cow comfort specialist, because her longevity is your legacy.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, very happy to welcome to the show Dr. Larry Roth. Larry is the Vice President of Nutrition at Agrarian Solutions. Larry, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure to be here. Appreciate it, Barry.
So can you tell us a little bit, Larry, about like where you're from? Did you grow up in agriculture, and how did you end up in this space?
You bet. Barry, I'm originally from the state of Wyoming, grew up in the cow-calf business, undergraduate at University of Wyoming, and then a master's, Texas A&M, PhD at Nebraska, both in ruminant nutrition. And so I've spent my career working with probiotics, what I'm going to call frontline consulting, research and development. Had the opportunity to do a little bit of traveling all over this country and around the world. So I get up thinking about how wild yeast and molds are going to attack our animals and how we can defend them.
I'm curious, you grew up in Wyoming, and I'm from a cow-calf operation myself in a different part of the country, but pretty wide open space there. Like, could you, as a kid, could you have envisioned getting a PhD?
Not really, but a little trivia. I was in fourth grade in 1970. That tells you how old I am. And the teacher asked us to say, write a little essay on what we're going to be doing in 10 years. And I wrote that I would be attending Texas A&M to study feedlot management.
Oh, that's cool.
I missed it by a couple of years.
Good. Yeah. So you did have some vision. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about Agrarian Solutions, the company you work for?
Yes. Barry, Agrarian Solutions is a probiotic company, first and foremost. Our tagline is defend and protect. So our concept is animals enter the world with a certain ability to reach their genetic potential. About everything that happens to them from the moment of conception on takes them away from achieving that genetic potential. So our thought is, how can we defend and protect the animal's ability to reach their genetic potential? So we work with products that we can give to a calf from the time that it's born. We work with beneficial bacteria, IGY, the egg-based pathogen-focused proteins, and we use some plant actives and different combinations that go all the way through to maturity, lactation. And our business is probably 98% on the ruminant side. We're probably 90% dairy, 8% beef, and 2% goes to the non-ruminants.
Very good. If you don't mind, can you explain a little bit more about one of the product ranges you have? So you talked about IGY from eggs, which I think is a really interesting technology, and maybe some people haven't heard of that.
You bet. So we can take laying hens, like would produce eggs for us to consume, but take these laying hens and vaccinate them against different bacteria, viruses, and protozoa. And the laying hen is going to put their antibodies, the IgY, into the egg yolk. And then there's proprietary means to harvest the IgY and prepare it. So for example, we can vaccinate hens against different types of E. coli, different rota, coronaviruses, and even against crypto. But the neat thing about the IgY is that the IgY is going to be resistant to protein digesting enzymes in the animal's small intestine. Take IgG. That's going to be susceptible to being broken up for the animal to use as nutrition. So let's put IgY into, be it newborn animals or animals of any age. And the IgY, I'm going to liken it to a heat-seeking missile that's going to go out and latch on to whatever bacteria, virus, or protozoa it was designed for. So we're doing some neat things with the crypto. So I get excited about the IgY. I think there's a tremendous potential. We're seeing IgY being used in humans and also on the animal side.
Okay. Thanks for explaining that.
For more than 25 years, Agrarian Solutions has been guided by our RISE core values: relational, integrity, strategic, and excellence. Since 1996, we've been a global leader in proprietary bacteria technology, delivering research-backed microbial solutions that help livestock defend against environmental challenges like mycotoxins, supporting health, performance, and reproductive success. From science-driven innovation to trusted relationships, Agrarian Solutions exist to help others succeed. Learn more at agrariansolutions.com.
Well, I think the plan today is to talk a little bit about every dairy producer's favorite topic, mycotoxins. I'm just kidding. But, you know, this is something I think even in my career the last 15 or 20 years, the interest or the emphasis and the knowledge on this has really increased. And unfortunately, it's maybe opening our eyes to how big of a problem this is. So maybe, again, assuming there's maybe some people listening that don't necessarily have a firm handle on exactly what that term means, can you help us with the definition of mycotoxins first?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. What are mycotoxins? So there's different molds that grow on plants, and it seems that the main molds that we're concerned about for producing mycotoxins that affect our animals are on starch-producing plants, be it corn, sorghum, and small grains. So molds are growing, and they get stressed. And we don't always understand which particular stress, combination of temperature, moisture levels, that trigger the mold to produce this toxin. Now, the molds could care less about the dairy cow. The molds are concerned that other types of molds are going to grow into their neighborhood and live on that corn plant, principally on the corn grain. So the mold says, hey, I'm going to do competitive exclusion here. I'm going to produce this poison, and it's going to keep other things from growing here in my neighborhood. Well, unfortunately, these toxins designed to restrict mold growth actually have some negative impacts upon our animals. I think one of the first places we see mycotoxins impacting an animal, and I'm going to say animal, but our primary focus today is going to be the dairy cow. So maybe I'll say dairy cow, and the same basic principles go to other animals. But I think that the digestive tract is the most important part of the animal. As a nutritionist, that seems natural. But the small intestine lining is kind of like a castle wall. It's designed to keep the barbarians in the digestive tract and out of the castle, out of the body. Well, mycotoxins come along, they get absorbed by the small intestine, they cause small intestine cell death, and now we have a hole in our castle wall, and all of the bad stuff gets into the body. How is that for a scientific term? So now the body has to deal with that. We want nutrients to go to the most profitable, useful purposes. Depending upon the stage of production, it could be growth, could be lactation, reproduction. But now the animal has to try to stay alive. It's got to repair the digestive tract. Well, that takes nutrients. It's got to mount an inflammatory response. That takes nutrients. Mm-hmm. The liver now, the body's biochemical factory, has to work to get rid of all of these toxins. And the mycotoxin load on the liver changes its ability to do what it's supposed to. So we have the high-producing dairy cow, needs glucose. Well, that's going to come from the liver, but I'm sorry, the liver is under attack by all of these toxins. So mycotoxins can destroy the small intestine lining, cause nutrient reallocation, impact the liver health, so the liver is less efficient at processing nutrients, put a load on the immune system, so the immune system isn't able to defend the body as well against other invaders. And that's our basic issue. And then we have things like zearalenone that we could call the imposter mycotoxin that is trying to mimic estrogen. And so we can see some impaired reproduction. But Mary, I think probably our biggest challenge is just a reallocation of nutrients. Nutrients cost money. And so now we have money that we were hoping that would go to something productive. It's going to repairing the digestive tract and just keeping the animal alive.
Let's dig into a couple of those pieces a little more. So I think you did a good job of explaining, you know, molds grow on these crops sometimes, other times they don't so much. And then I think what adds to the complexity I've been learning about is, as you noted, it's really when those molds are stressed that they make a lot of these compounds, and that's been very difficult to predict accurately, I think. So if I'm a dairy producer and I want to know, you know, this crop year or with the current batch of grains I'm buying in, that's different source every week, how do I try to assess my level of risk for, you know, in this current year in terms of mycotoxin exposure to my cows?
Yeah. How am I going to determine what my potential risk is going to be? Part of it is we kind of watch the weather. We try to do as good a job as we can with our crops. Anything that stresses the plant tips the balance toward the molds. And we don't even have to have high levels of molds to get the mycotoxins. The mold just needs to be stressed. I'm a big believer in testing. I really encourage folks to test their corn silage, high moisture corn, snaplage, as the case might be, going into storage in the fall so that we know what type of inventory we have of nutrients, but also, do we have a great big pile out there of mycotoxins, or are we going to be clean? So testing, I think, is absolutely imperative to know what our mycotoxin risks are going to be. And if we're testing going into storage with our crops that are most likely to have mycotoxins, then we can put together a strategy. One of the challenges today is that we feed a lot more byproducts. And let's talk about distillers for a moment, distillers grains. Basically, what we're going to do with distillers is concentrate the mycotoxins in our feedstock by about a factor of 3. So what could go wrong with something like that? So I'm not saying anybody would ever do this, but if we had a load of distillers or a load of corn grain, excuse me, that was a little bit higher in DON, where might I take that, Barry? Well, I might take that someplace where they're not going to be as critical and as likely to test it. And then it gets concentrated by a factor of three. And then one of your dairy clients buys that. And now we're bringing the distillers in. Part of the challenge with our large dairies is they can bring in the byproducts, but by the time we get our testing results, they've already fed up that load. So we need to be watching the regional conditions of what's happening for mycotoxins. So it isn't just what's happening on this particular farm, what's happening in the area. And then if I start buying byproducts from outside of my area, I need to know what's going on there. So the mycotoxins are there. They're just waiting to cause issues, it seems to me. One of the neat things that has happened over the last 20 years or so is the plant breeders have done an extremely good job, in my opinion, of making these corn hybrids more drought tolerant. And so we don't see the aflatoxin today like what we might have in the past in a drought year. So our concern is more, I think, the cool weather mycotoxins, things like DON, zearalenone, T2. Fumonisin is a little bit more of a warm weather, high humidity mycotoxin. Probably where we see the most risk to aflatoxin is if we're feeding a lot of cotton products and coming from an area that has experienced some drought. So if we were having this conversation, Barry, what, 30 years ago, and I said real quick, name a mycotoxin, well, that's easy, aflatoxin. But today our issues seem to be more DON, zearalenone, and T2. And then if we get a lot of humidity and warm weather, it can be fumonisin. We've seen fumonisin become an issue in certain areas after hurricanes.
Evonik is committed to help supply a growing world population with healthy and affordable animal protein while prioritizing animal welfare, the efficient use of natural resources, and food safety. Evonik's expertise in low-protein diets and supplemental amino acids help ruminant farmers around the globe to enhance feed efficiency, reduce costs, improve animal health, and lower greenhouse gas and nitrogen emissions.
Larry, I know when I get calls about mycotoxins, one of the really hard things is most of the guidelines that are out there, and I mean, this is a very difficult area to know things for certain because it's very difficult to do controlled studies to establish like, okay, here's a break point. And like pigs, for example, respond much more consistently, I think, to like DON than a cow does. So, and then I think the hardest part, and this is why I want your feedback, is I think a lot of people that know a lot in this space would say it's probably the combinations that are even harder to study that maybe lead to the most problems. And it makes it almost impossible for us to have black and white sort of guidelines of, okay, this combo is okay, this is not. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and that's a fantastic topic. And you touched on a number of different important subjects in there. Let's start by taking a trip down memory lane. When I was in school in the last century, we were told that ruminants don't need to be concerned about mycotoxins because they're blessed with this fermentation vat between their ribs, and it's going to break all the mycotoxins down. So it was just the non-ruminants, the pigs and the chickens, that needed to be concerned. I think we're understanding now that with the diets that we feed to our ruminants, and let's talk about the high-producing dairy cow. The high-producing dairy cow standing out there in the free stall today is really a very different animal than was out there 50 years ago. She's got a different diet, different percentages of her body weight that she's eating. Feed goes through a lot faster. Things have changed. So I think we need to be thinking more about how mycotoxins can affect ruminants. It isn't just a non-ruminant issue. And then you talked about combinations. And I think really that's the critical factor is when we get combinations of mycotoxins, they tend to accentuate the negative effects of each of them. And as nutritionists, we like to have numbers. We like to have risk factors and things like that. And so people will say to me, well, at what level of Dawn do I need to be concerned about it affecting my cows? And I'll come up with an answer and say, I don't know. Okay. And the reason I say that, Barry, is there's so many different factors involved. Okay. What's the stage of production? How high producing is this cow? What's going on repro wise? There's so many different things that come into play. Do we have social stress? Is the cow overstocked? How's our feeding pattern? Are we consistent in how we feed them? How balanced is our diet? So there's a lot of different factors that come into play that can affect the cow's immune system, that reduce her ability to respond to a mycotoxin challenge. So typically, I'll use one part per million Dawn in the TMR as a break point at which the cow is now in a high-risk situation. Barry, I can take you to dairies that are at a 2 to 3 part per million Dawn, and they're going along and they're doing quite well. I can take you to others that they're at a half part per million Dawn, and it's a disaster. It all comes to what is the level of, I hate to say stress because sometimes that implies mismanagement, but what's the level of challenge on the cow? Again, stocking rate, facilities, how far she got to walk, is she got good access to water, consistent access to feed, so many different things like that that come into play. So we come up with risk categories that start to say she becomes more at risk in these areas. And typically we do that on a single basis with the mycotoxins. But generally the mycotoxins don't occur just one at a time. It's multiple mycotoxins together. And that seems to lower the threshold of the cow to be able to handle the mycotoxins. So I've kind of danced around your issue and have to say it really depends on the particular dairy. And it may depend upon that particular cow. The cow who's producing at 130 pounds is going to be a lot more susceptible to mycotoxins than similar genetics, perhaps, but she's down there at 60 or 65. So there's so many different factors that come into play. But Mary, once we see things that don't add up with the dairy, you know, man, we got the diet going right, particle size is good, everything should be going just fine. But these cows just aren't getting bred back. They're not peaking like they ought to. We just have more transition issues than what we should have. Let's start looking at mycotoxins. And I'm going to take you back to an earlier comment. I'm a big believer in testing. Know what our feeds are going into storage. Let's be testing on a monthly basis. And then when things start to drift in terms of health and performance, we can go back and look and see what's been happening to our mycotoxins over time. So test going into storage and then test on a monthly basis. And let me make another comment on that. I really believe in testing the TMR. We can test individual ingredients, such as going into storage, and we can test our corn silage on a monthly basis. But I really believe in testing the TMR, especially if we're doing some byproducts. It's going to give us a greater opportunity to catch more of the sources of mycotoxins than being dependent solely upon what's our corn silage assays telling us.
So that's a great lead into the last topic I want to spend some time on, which is, okay, obviously, if we know that a feed source that we're buying in is loaded with mycotoxin, we're going to switch. But unfortunately, if we've got 300 ton of corn silage sitting out there, unless it's literally killing animals, we can't really just throw it away, right? We've got to feed through it. So how do you help people work through situations like that?
We've always got to be prepared to defend and protect. Go back to our company logo. And so that's where we've put together a product based on our proprietary bacteria to help defend and protect. So we've done a research study, independent controlled study. We didn't actually conduct the study, hired research-minded veterinarians to do it, and showed that with multiple lactation cows, we could pick up another 2.5 pounds of milk. High-producing cows, over the first 150 days, they were averaging close to 120 pounds. We improved the confirmed pregnant at day 61 to 67, about 28% for AI and something like 16% for embryo transfer. So I would recommend looking at our bacteria technology. It's not a binder. Independent research suggests that some of the binder products out there may actually tie up some of the nutrients that we're trying to get into the cow. For example, some of the vitamins and the amino acids. So we're not a binder. Our objective is let's help the cow work the way that she's supposed to, improve the gut integrity so that she's able to allocate nutrients to the most profitable purposes and protect the liver so that that biochemical factory can work the way that it's supposed to. So you're exactly right. We got 300,000 ton of corn silage. We got to do something with it. Well, let's put the DTX technology to work. Defend and protect the cow.
We probably don't have time to fully get into this, but you kind of laid out the logic that the probiotic, in some way, maybe we don't understand, and in some way you think is improving that castle you talked about at the beginning. Like, any quick insights into how that might work?
Barry, we know that there's active transport proteins that help the digestive tract cells absorb nutrients and absorb the mycotoxins. There's also active transport proteins that work to clean up that cell. Metabolites can increase there. Mycotoxins are there, and they can cause the cell death. Well, these animals are designed that they have these active transport proteins to, shall we say, kick the garbage out, clean up the cell, and put those mycotoxins back into the small intestine. I know that our call here is focusing on dairy cows, but we do a little bit of work on the poultry side in another country, and we're starting to see that when our bacteria technology is fed, we tend to see more of the mycotoxins showing up in the manure than when people are feeding the binders. So let's help the castle wall work the way that it's supposed to, trigger those active transport proteins to be more active, clean up the mycotoxins, don't let them into the body, but kick them back into the digestive tract.
Fascinating. Okay, that's a good answer. Thank you.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Want a herd management software designed for you? BovaSync is helping herds by managing data faster and easier. Contact BovaSync today to learn more. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Cow Manager, ahead of the herd together. Safe, simple, stop lack. Contact AHV for comfortable dry cow care. Reduce dyscalcemia and simplify transition cow care with CalBal Pro from ChemLock Nutrition. you're tired of juggling paperwork, spreadsheets, and multiple systems, GoTheSync makes herd management simple. It's a software designed for producers, helping you track health, breeding, and performance all in one place, while improving labor efficiency and cutting down on time spent entering data. That means fewer hours in the office and more time where it matters most, working with your herd. Learn more at GoTheSync.com and see how simple and efficient herd management can be.
Okay, well, we've got our three famous questions we got to ask everybody at the end. So looking forward to your thoughts on these, Larry. First of all, do you have a favorite dairy-related book or resource that you turn to?
That's a fantastic question. I'm going to say I've got what I'm going to call my council of advisors, people that I can call up and ask them a question. Some of them are very good on the chemistry side, some on the repro side, some on nutrition or management. There's also the Large Herd Management Handbook from the Large Herd Conference. That's also very good.
Excellent. So phone a friend is always a good one, right?
There you go.
All right. Second question. What about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
All right. Favorite book or resource outside of agriculture. Well, it's hard to go wrong with the Bible to be that handbook for life. But another book that I have found very helpful, it's actually a historical novel called Killer Angels, written in 1974, Mike Shara. But it's basically talking about the Battle of Gettysburg, again, as a historical novel. Talks about, I gave a speech on it one time in Toastmasters called 10 Business Lessons from Gettysburg. And I'll just give you one of them. On the first day of Gettysburg, General John Buford, cavalry general, regular army, said, "We got to seize the high ground. In any situation, always seize the high ground. Do what's right, work from a moral standpoint, and you're going to be better off. Always take the high ground."
I like that. Very good. I've heard of that book. I've never read it. I'll have to add that to the long list I have to read.
It's also made into a movie called Gettysburg.
Oh, that was the basis for it. I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thirdly, in your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
I think what helps dairy professionals be successful is that ability to question themselves. Am I right in this, or do I need to get another opinion? If we put ourselves into an echo chamber and the only people around us are the yes people, we have a greater opportunity of going astray. So I think what sets dairy professionals, or I'm going to broaden the question to any person being successful, is that ability to question themselves. And then goes with that, one of my undeniable truths of life: surround yourself with people better than what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, everything else is a detail.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's a great note to end on. Good pearls of wisdom there. So our guest today, again, has been Dr. Larry Roth from Agrarian Solutions. And Dr. Roth, thanks again for joining. It was a great conversation.
All right. Appreciate it, Barry Bradford. It was fun.
Well, this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. And if you haven't followed the show yet, make sure you hit the button so you don't miss the next episode. We will see you then.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.